You're listening to South Florida's good news station, WCNO Palm City.
The following is a paid program. The content is provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership are not responsible for the content.
When I die and I lay me to rest, gonna go to the place that's the best. When I lay me down to die, going up to the spirit in the sky. Going up to the spirit in the sky. It's where I'm gonna go.
Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC. And now, the host of the Team Marquette program, Joe Marquette.
Well, we are not talking politics today.
No.
We're giving that up.
Okay,
that sounds good.
Yeah. We're talking the stock market. The Dow Jones average was down 606 points today.
Whoa. Wow. But here comes the $64,000 question. Why?
For no reason, really. The economy is great.
That's one opinion. Next opinion.
I think a lot of it has to do with the Fed and how much they're adding to the money supply.
Okay.
That affects us.
Pastor Dave, you have an opinion?
I don't really know.
I love Perlman and a couple of different guys I listened to this week and said, okay, so the Fed funds rate is 2.25%. Inflation is 2%. It's a net 0.25% interest. And they're worried about 0.25% interest?
Perception, Joe. It's not the quarter percent.
You know what you just said? That is the biggest word ever, I think, in life. Perception. People... Today, I also heard when we took P.E. ratios are the best they've been in years, and the based on today's P.E. ratio, based on the market today, they're guesstimating that people are, the soothsayers, that next year's price-to-earnings ratio will be 5, which is ridiculous, which has never been that low. The key is what I'm trying to say is, and I often look at this and I say, when you get these big hits in the market, and you get a lot of people talking about it like us, and you get panic in the market, it runs out the little guys, and the big guys just sit back there and wait to buy. You were talking a few minutes ago about companies buying back their own stock.
Right.
Well, this is to the benefit of the big guys that are owning the company. They can buy it back. Then guess what they can do? They can also resell it when the market's back up. There's all kinds of strategies.
You know, there's people that track that, Joe. And I was reading an article the other day that there's never been more buybacks of stock by corporate insiders than there has been in the last 3 months.
Now, here's why. The economy is excellent.
And maybe they know something we don't.
When they're buying it back, they're also buying it back what they consider a good price.
I'm talking about the shareholders who own the stock and are dumping it, Joe.
Okay, who's buying it then?
The company.
Okay, now who is the company?
Well, the company is the executives
still,
at the top.
But it's still the stock owners.
Oh, yeah, they're partly. Not all of them are stock unless they got incentive stock options. What about the corporate
okay,
execs.
But if I work for the company, let's say I'm chairman of the board of the company. Yep. I get $1 million a year salary. It's just usually.
Right.
Some of them are much higher.
Right.
and my company is buying back stock. What's that do to me?
Well, first of all, if you're a shareholder, which a lot of them are.
Well, let's say I'm not.
It's just, you're not a shareholder? Well, it doesn't do nothing. Much for you.
Okay, now I have stock options. I have all kinds of things that are incentives for me to make an extra $2, $3, $5, $10 million if the company does well. If the company buys back the stock and I have a contract that shows prices for stock that I get my options at.
Well, time out. You said they're not shareholders, so assume that they're out of the market. You're saying they got the incentive. Well, that's the same thing, Joe. They've got stock options.
Well, I was given. No, that was plan A and B. I'm in plan B.
Really, but if they have options, is that they're in the same boat. They're shareholders or potential shareholders. They're even better off because with the options, they buy in at a lower price usually.
Yes.
And so they got a built-in gain when this happens.
Anyway, today, now, this is a subject that we almost never talk about because this is a bit of the sophistication in the market, which has nothing to do with 98% or 99% of us that are in the market. Most of us, when we look at the stock market, we say, hey, it scares me to death. It just scares me to death. I can buy stock. If I'd have bought it in Facebook or Microsoft or whatever when they first came out, boy, would I be a happy camper today because I would have made a fortune. Well, you might have made a fortune, but the only way you make any money in a stock market is to buy and sell.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't sell, you don't make anything. You're holding that stuff in paper. So what happens is, let's say the market goes, you buy at 10 and it goes up to 100, then it goes back down to 50. You look at not what you made, but what you lost because you should have sold at 100. How many times have we heard that from people? I lost a fortune. Wait a minute. What'd you pay for it? I paid 10. Uh-huh. And it got up to 100 and you didn't sell. Now it's to 50 and you're going to sell. Okay.
So you know what they call that in economics, Joe? Opportunity losses.
No kidding.
So that's what they're talking about. They're not real losses.
No. They're paper.
They're paper.
But it's also called being an opportunist because there's tons of people that go. Now, 98, 99% of us don't do that. What we do, we get into it. Let's say I've got a 401k at work. A 401k at work means company says, okay, fine. You are allowed to put in 3% of your paycheck into this account, and we, the company, will put in 3%. That means if I make $50,000 a year, I can put $1,500 a year into my paycheck. The company puts $15,000 in. Now I have $3,000. That's called 100% return in 1 year. That's the greatest deal there is. Now, it's invested in the market. Now, what's it mean in the market? Boy, lots of places that money can go. If you're a sophisticated investor, you might pick some of the investments you want to go in. The average person says, tell me what to do, when the guy that opens the account, and some of these things are age-weighted, they have different strategies and formulas, but given a period of time, here's one of my favorite ones, and Alan, which is Alan Love, is a retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin whose football and baseball team are falling apart, which is not important.
but let me, he just sits there and grins.
I know, but that I woke him right up. You notice he was falling asleep until I said that. So now, Alan, go back 20 years. Ready?
Yes.
Between 20 years ago and now, what have the S&P 500 averaged per year?
Well, it's averaged about 10.9%.
Per year?
Per year.
Now, it's had some years it made 20 and 30.
And some years it went down, like 08.
And lost 20 and 30.
Right.
But if you have time and you're invested in the S&P 500, let's say you're 20, 30, 40, 50, now all of a sudden, you say, fine, I've got another 10 or 15 or 20 years or 30 or 40 years to go. I'm really not taking what I call undue risk. Mm-hmm. Is that a fair statement?
Right.
Okay. Now, all of a sudden, I'm 70. Am I thinking change a little bit?
Oh, just a little.
Just a little, but you shouldn't be out of the market if you're in your 70s. You should watch it more closely and maybe make some changes based on what the market's doing. Like right now, it's in a little bit of a downtrend, so you might want to take some money off the table.
Wait a minute.
For a while.
It might be too late. You've already taken a pretty good hit. You're down 10, 12%, right? You think it's going to go down another 10 or 12?
It could, but now, what I normally do is do the reverse of bonds. I ladder down. I take some off the table if it drops 5%. I take a little more off the table if it drops 10%. So, you know, you're...
Let me ask you a question. Is that why you're worth $10 million?
It's a strategy that...
I'm picking on him because
it's a strategy that helps to protect most of the game. Nothing is guaranteed.
No, nothing is guaranteed. Here's another thing that's happened. Back to the old rules. You remember there was a 60-40, 70-30, 80-20?
Yep.
Remember those rules?
Yep.
Well, what happens is when people don't die, those strategies sometimes can come back to bite them big because the average person years ago died at 65. Now 80, 85, 90 is not abnormal.
I think what you're trying to say, Joe, is that if you're going to live longer, you need to have the money in the market longer.
There you go.
Which means you're not going to reduce your exposure like you did in the past. You may want to keep it the same or increase it in certain circumstances.
And what he that's where I was going. And then the second part of the scenario was, and this is where we are, when interest rates are going up, which the Fed controls interest rates, if we're invested under the old structure, meaning I'm 70, so I should half my money in bonds, well, guess what? That's a guaranteed I'm going to lose my money. My value of my account's going to go down. So on the other hand, if I'm all equities and we take this correction 10-12% down, I could be down then, which leads me into insured investments that protect the money no matter what. I'm not going to go into detail about that. But the key thing, when I look at people today that are clients of mine, my stomach feels so good when I've got them in an insured investment that where they're protected. I can sleep at night. I don't have to be the market timer and figure out exactly. Yeah, we love making these 20 and 25% years, but nobody does that every year. So nobody, and we were talking about this earlier, Vince, that the people I know that were good at the market, they really knew their stuff. They don't teach. They don't write books. They don't do anything. They sit at home in their boxer shorts or their nightgown, and they trade their own account, and they have an instinct, or they know what they're doing, and they don't need to tell anybody. And every once in a while, I know a few of these people, and they don't really talk to me. The only reason they talk to me is to brag.
That's right.
and really.
Yeah.
And,
so what you were telling me before, it sounded like they were just bragging. They needed a place to brag.
Yeah, and they could care less about teaching anybody.
Why should they?
Why should they? They have no reason. So every time when I see a person writes a book, or they say they did all this, or they're on a TV show, I think, that means they couldn't do it, so now they're teaching it. And that's pretty much my opinion. So I don't pretend to be a genius by any stretch. When I look at each person and their objectives, their long-term objectives, their short-term objectives, when I look at a person, they said, I've got short-term money. Short-term money, what do you mean? I might need it in 6 months. Leave it in the bank. Well, Joe, I don't want to leave it in the bank because the bank's paying me 1 or 1.5 or whatever. And I said, if you're going to need that money in 6 months or less, leave it in the bank because that's liquid cash. So you made 10% and you had $100,000. You made $10,000. But if you lost $10,000, now you've only got $90,000. And in that six-month period of time, that can happen. So on the other hand, if you have a longer horizon, now you've got a different story, what you might do. So
and over time, a reasonable goal for the U.S. stock market has been between 8% and 12% over time, per year.
Per year. And there's nothing wrong with that as a goal.
No.
So if you're 30, 40, 50, that's a wonderful scenario. Now all of a sudden I'm 50, 60, 70. Now I'm starting to get scared because I don't have that much time and I don't want to keep working. I don't know if my health's going to let me keep working. What if I'm stuck living to be a 90? All of a sudden, the insured investment starts to make sense to me. Now, my compliance people say you should know the insurance company and their claims-paying ability. Dealing only with the A-plus rated insurance company sure helps. But the reality is this. When I look at what's going on today, this is not a time to panic. What happens is most of the people in the market today are going to weather the storm, and the economy is good. The overall complexion is good. Yes, there are some things on the horizon, but you can't just keep going up. There's no such thing. You can't go up. If you go up too much, you've got to come back. Our government, our Fed, our soothsayers have never figured out how we can stay in the middle, ever. Never. And they never will, as far as I'm concerned. Either it's too much, too little, too much, too little. Mm-hmm. Our job is to how can we look at it and win no matter what.
Diversification, Joe.
1-888-221-8990. That's a toll-free number. Our Messianic Jew that's sitting down here is supposed to be reminding me to do this, and he didn't do it.
Because I was fascinated by the discussion. I'm sorry.
That's because he fell asleep, really, the truth is. You know, but that's okay. You didn't fall.
He needs his rest, Joe. Come on, leave him alone.
Vince Rizzino, CPA, forensic CPA, ex-college professor, is sitting here today. Alan Love, retired prosecuting attorney from the great state of Wisconsin, a guest member of ours, is sitting here today. And I'm Joe Martek, financial advisor. I'm sitting here. Other members of the team are not here are Dan Warren, independent insurance agent, big word, independent, meaning he doesn't work for one insurance company. He works for the client, and he now has under his umbrella, give or take, 100 companies that in case this one doesn't work, he can move you.
Big umbrella.
Greg Fasula, attorney, probably the only attorney in the whole world I'd like as a next-door neighbor, unless we're arguing politics because we don't agree, but that's okay. Good man. Understanding, listener, fair, does the right thing for people. By far one of the better people we've all ever met. Ms. Victoria Lloyd, Remax of Stewart, the hardest working person alive when it comes to real estate. She's it. Mike Paulus, mortgage broker. Boy, have we learned a lot from Mike. Mike is... I guess what I love about Mike more than anything else, if I walk into the bank and I apply for a mortgage, they sometimes take a deposit, have me do paperwork. 2 or 3 weeks later, they say yes, no, or maybe. Mike will tell you in 15 minutes over the phone, doesn't cost you anything. And that counts monster points for me, so you know where you stand. If you have a problem, he says, here's your problem. Here's what you need to do to correct it, and it's going to take you 3 months, 6 months, or whatever, if you do it exactly the way I'm telling. So he works with people one-on-one to make it get done. So the nature of our group, and I joke about this, but I mean it sincerely, when I add up our group, we have probably 200 years worth of combined experience because none of us are young. And then when we add Alan as a guest member, now we're up to 300 years of combined experience because
a lot of wisdom there, Joe.
There's a lot of wisdom there. Is that fair, Alan?
Yes, it's very fair. Vince, I have a question for you. Well, we have a call.
You're going to take a caller first. We will take the caller, and then I will go. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Hey, now.
Go right ahead.
Yes, I have a question. Is this Chris Bone? Okay. How you guys doing?
We're doing, really well. Thank you, Lord. We couldn't be doing much better.
Praise the Lord. Oh, I have a question. My question is a corporate structure. Just wanted to make sure before I make any moves. I have a corporation here in the state of Florida. It's active. It's filed with the Internal Revenue Services. I have an EIN number, but I wanted to know if I can get two separate licenses for two different occupations under that same corporation.
I don't see why not.
No reason why not.
I don't see any problem with that.
You could have 10 businesses under one corporate name. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, you could be selling widgets under one name, and you could be manufacturing sub widgets under another name. Pick whatever your category. You could have 10 businesses all under one corporate name.
It could be in a corporation or out of a corporation. So it really doesn't affect you in terms of the license itself. The license, you have to have credentials to get the license. As long as you have your credentials, doesn't matter what.
Yeah, the corporation owns your business. And you, if you want, you can have separate checking accounts for each one, but all under the same corporate name. You can keep different books.
What type of entity is this, caller? Is it an S corporation, an LLC, or a regular corporation? Corp. What is it?
Corp.
It's a regular corporation.
Okay. Have you made an election? Is it a subchapter S, or are you into a...
This is a regular corporation.
So that means...
Yeah, that means he's a Schedule C.
Okay. Now,
I don't mean schedule.
Are you there?
He's
are
a
you
C
there?
Corporation.
Are you there on purpose? Is that the structure you picked out?
Well, yeah. I mean, we wanted to. It's a company that we formed so that we can have a business under. And another opportunity came about, but I just wanted to make sure I can use that corporation. Sure.
How long have you had this one business working, this one corp?
We started at the beginning of the year.
Okay.
We filed for it at the beginning of the year, but as of recent, we're still trying to kind of like accomplish, you know, all the paperwork and have it, you know, up and running and officially open with the city here in Florida, in Palm Beach.
Well, the key thing is this: there's lots of things you can do with a corporation. The same thing you could do if you're a person. It makes no difference. But there's different types of corporations depending on the type of business you're in, and there's different tax structures. Like Vince was just saying, if you're a subchapter S or an LLC or a regular C corp, we got different.
There's different types of entities which have different, little, slightly different tax benefits to them. So that's why we ask you, what was the thinking in going with a regular C corporation? I know they just reduced rates for regular corporations down to 21%, which is great.
Yeah.
But it's still left with that potential double taxation if you go to sell it or if you want to make distributions out of it.
See, what happens is you start the company, you're not making any money, and then all of a sudden, 2 years later, you're generating $250,000 a year and you're taking a $50,000 salary. You could have a potential tax problem. A lot of times what we suggest you do is that you meet with a qualified person like a CPA and say, hey, here's what I'm doing, here's what I want to do, here's where I'm going to go, advise me on which is the right way to go. Because once you make a bad decision, sometimes 3, 4, 5 years down the road, it can come back to haunt you. If you make a good decision, it can help you.
Right. Yeah. I think the one, if I remember, it was just a regular corp.
Yep. Yep.
So at the end of the title, it's CORP dot. That's C corp, I guess.
Well, what's at the end?
They named it a corp. That's all.
Oh. Yeah. I mean, sometimes it's an INC, which is an incorporation, or.
You can name a corp.
It could be an LTD or something like that.
Whatever usually, the initials
usually
are.
Usually the initials gives you, give you an indication on what type of company it is.
But hey, the key thing is this: as you're progressing, you got a guy named Vince Rosino sitting here as a CPA. He's a good person to talk to off the radio, and let him counsel you. Just file that away. If you want him to call you off the radio, he can do that. It's up to you. Did you leave your name and number with Pastor Jonathan when you called in?
No, I was about to, but then he patched me in.
Oh. All right, then what you do is, if you don't mind, because we're not a sophisticated radio here, but call back and say, hey, let me leave you my name and number and have Vince Rosino call me when he has time.
Okay, no problem. Thank you very much. I appreciate
it. You're welcome.
All right,
thanks,
my man.
For calling, caller.
Thanks. You see, because this, when you don't know Vince, you don't know.
Yeah, it was an interesting question because he's bringing up licenses one hand and the corporation on the other. Usually they're governed in two different marinas.
Well, you see, here's what happens. If you don't learn it, if you don't know it, it's confusing.
Yeah.
Sure. We take for granted, and what you do every day and why you went and got all of this education is because it's not that hard for you. But guess what? Somebody else starting off from scratch, I was talking to a young man, relative of Bulldogs, by the way, and he's going to move to Michigan of all the places in the world, and he's a carpenter. And he says, I'm going to get GC licensed. What should I do? And I said, well, what are you going to do? He says, I'm going to go and bang nails and be a carpenter. I said, well, if I were you, I wouldn't do anything. If you start hiring people, now you need to get into talking to a CPA to put a structure together. Because right now, if you're just going to work, you can be a sole proprietor. You don't have to spend the money to go do all that stuff. But
exactly.
If all
there's liability issues, there's a lot involved. I asked them whether they're going to have partners or they want to bring new people in, and all that plays into the selection of what you're going to do.
Now, getting a license, getting insured.
And getting a license, insurance, even the licenses. Like I said, I'm a CPA. To get my license, I could operate under any entity. main thing is to get my license. I have to have the credentials to get my license. But if once you have it, you can put it into a, use it in a corporation, in a partnership, or whatever.
If I did Joe Martech Inc., let's just say right there, forget now what vehicle the Inc. is. I now can sell widgets, make widgets. I can build furniture. I can sell cars. I can do anything I want under that name. However, when it comes to filing taxes, now all of a sudden I might have a problem. Now, I've got to counsel somebody like Vince to say, hey, should I be a C Corp, an S Corp? Should I be an, I mean.
Yeah, what are the advantages and disadvantages? And you make a decision.
Yeah.
But you got to know all the inputs. That's why I ask them to come in and we talk. Usually it's, you know, it's a conversation. So you get an idea.
You can't figure it out just over the phone like that quick.
It's a vacuum. You can't do it in a vacuum.
I've got a young man that he's an electrician, and he's leaving a company, and he's starting a company, and he and his sister are going to be partners. And I said, have you noticed what structure? I mean, what happens if she dies and you die, or you die? Who gets the company? Who owns it? Are you married? Do each one of you have children? Are they married? I mean, you know, there's a can of worms that can be opened up if these things happen.
Sure.
So if you structure it right up front and you make an agreement and everybody does it, we have a thing that we've never talked about, which is called key man insurance.
Right.
So what happens if this business starts off with two people and all of a sudden now it's got 40 or 50 people, and the two people that started it, if one of them died, they get half the business, or that goes to a relative that may not know anything about the business and may just move into the business and could destroy it. But you could have an agreement to buy out that person, and you could get an insurance policy called Key Man Insurance to buy that person. There's all kinds of things that 99% of the people when they're young starting a business don't think about. But when that business starts to become viable, can be a big problem.
Well, you get these things, Joe. It's like I got a call the other day from a client. He had bought a rental property 30 years ago in his own name. He wasn't married.
Mm.
So now he gets married, and here it is, roll forward 15 years later after he got married. And he says, I want to do a 1031 exchange. But I want to gift,
now
half of it to my...
Explain a 1031. 99% of people never heard of it.
Well, a 1031 refers to the IRS code, section 1031, which allows you, if it's basically commercial rental property, or it's got to be a commercial property under the new law. It used to be you could do it for a lot of things. Now they've restricted it as what you can use it for. But anyway, what it allows you to do is, if say you have a piece of rental property, you have a house, you paid $300,000 for it, and you've been renting it for years, and now you want to sell it and you want to buy something else, or you don't want to be a landlord anymore, you can sell. You can do what's a 1031 exchange. Let's say now you bought it for $100,000, it's worth $300,000 now, so you got a $200,000 profit. Well, if you outright sold the property, you'd have to pay taxes on the $200,000. So to simplify, what you could do under a 1031 is identify another piece of property, or get involved with a consortium of properties.
As long as you move and buy another piece
for the same value, at least the same value of what you sold the first one for, you can defer that $200,000 into the no tax. You put it into the new property. It reduces the value of the new property for tax purposes down by the deferred gain, and that becomes your new tax basis, which is a reduced basis.
This is a big deal.
It's a big deal. Now, here's the thing with this guy. He says, I had this property for 30 years, and I got married 15 years ago, and now he wanted to give half of it to his wife.
Oh, boy.
There's nothing wrong with giving it to your wife, but from a tax point of view, you'd be better off moving it in under your name. At least if something happens to you, you get a step up. Your wife will get a step up. There'll be no taxes to pay.
Now stay with that subject. Now stay there. See, that's another thing nobody knows about. Explain what you just said. See, we're taking this for granted that people understand a step up.
What happens is, under the present code, what happens is, upon death, if a piece of property is in the name of the individual who died, once you die, the property value gets reset to whatever the current market value is. So let's say you paid that $100,000 for that house, and now it's worth $300,000. Well, there's that $200,000 gain we talked about. Well, on death, that house would then get revalued at $300,000 for tax purposes, and there would be no tax, chances are, because you have a big exemption to offset.
So that means the beneficiary sells the house for $300,000, no tax.
No tax, exactly. And what happens is, the tax, in theory, gets absorbed by the estate. But the estate exemption today is $11.8 million. Most people will never reach that
value.
The
key thing that we're trying to say, this is a critical, critical thing, how people deed and transfer pieces of property. And how many times have we had people say, well, I'm adding my kids to my house or I'm doing this? Say, no, wrong was wrong, because instead of deeding it now, you put it either in a trust or you in a beneficiary, so they inherit it when you die. And when you die, that 100 that is now 300, they sell it for 300. There's no tax.
Right.
Now hear these magic words, no tax. So be very, very careful when it comes to transferring pieces of property while you're alive, or adding a name to a house or a piece of property while you're alive, because it could come back to haunt, not necessarily you, because you're going to need to die first, minor little thing, but the people that think you're doing them a favor, you might have done a terrible disservice.
That's right. Getting back to the same client with that $200,000 gain, Joe, if he died next year, his wife would inherit that property
right
at the fair value at that time, and all that gain would go away. No tax.
See, so he could... Now, if he's worried about her not getting her, if she's worried about him taking advantage, put her in a trust.
You do that too.
There's lots of ways you can go to protect your heirs in case of outside influences. Now you need an attorney, but big deal. I'm going to make $200,000, so I spend $1,000 or $2,000 or whatever the figure is with an attorney to do this correctly, get a CPA. The key thing that people hate to do, I love this. Gee, I hate to spend $1,000 to save $200,000. Vince,
The difference is they got to pay the $1,000 today. The rest of it, they worry about it when they sell it, or when their heirs get it, they can worry about it.
I went into an argument with a sophisticated family, and the dad had three daughters, and dad was going to leave a few million. Now, it was below the threshold of estate tax. So what he did was he started transferring stock out of his name to the kids while he's still alive. And I said, no. And they said, why? Because it goes back to what you paid for it. So dad dies, he paid $10 a share. Now it's worth $100 a share. He dies, the kids want to sell it. They got to go all the way back to the $10. But if he didn't do that, but gave it to him the day he died in a trust or a will, they inherited at $100. It's the same as this piece of property. No tax.
No tax to the beneficiaries.
Because
it gets the step up concept. They've been tinkering with that too under the new law. They were trying to get rid of it, but it stayed.
That's been a pretty sacred cow when it comes into investment properties forever and ever. And what's the new exemption now that can pass without
11.8 million individually and 23 million. Joint.
Now, here's what that means. I mean, how many times have I had people ask me this, and I can't count, and I know they've asked you. Joe, dad died. How much tax are we going to have to pay? And I said, well, dad left $2 million. There is no inheritance tax. Why not? Because there's an exemption that used to allow $5 million. Now it's $11 million that can pass, and there's no tax. Are you sure? Well, if you want to pay the government, I'm willing to take it. But the way the code works, if it was not given to you while he was alive and you inherited at his death and his estate is worth less than that $11 million, there's no estate tax or death tax, we call it.
Exactly. And because most people will not get caught in that net of the estate. I'm talking about the average person. The wealthy, it was designed to catch the wealthy. If you're worth a trillion dollars, billion dollars, whatever you're worth, they'll catch you. But even then, a lot of them, they will their money. Like I think Buffett said, he wants to give most of his money to charities.
He's going
to
give most of it to charities.
So if he does, there'll be no estate tax to pay.
Well, he and the founder of Microsoft and a couple of others have put together big charitable trusts, and they're putting money into it constantly. And they're getting other heavy hitters that are worth billions of dollars are constantly putting money into this charitable trust to help people.
Right.
And one of the things that they have to be careful of, and I'm talking, these are good people, is to make sure that they don't overly weight expenses into these trusts, that they're doing it for the benefit of the recipient, not like Vince, you've seen this before. people say, hey, I want to start a nonprofit so I can leave the money there, then my kids don't have to pay tax on it. Well, Infernal Revenue doesn't like it if you're trying to con them. They're looking for legitimate ways to do it. And this has been a big, this quote word fraud, you go to jail for that. Mm-hmm. Little minor thing.
Well, you know, there's a couple of things in connection with that, Joe, people should be reminded. You also have to file gift taxes. If annually you give more than $15,000 to a recipient,
right,
or $30,000 if it's a joint sharing thing, like a husband and wife give it to whatever, it's $30,000. A lot of people don't realize or even know that they should file gift tax. Now, the IRS says you're supposed to do it even if there's no ultimate tax because of the exemption.
Because
you have this $11 million. So you're giving away $50,000. And you say, well, so what? It's only 50. I got 11 million. No.
They want you to
they
file
need to track so they can track what you've used up of your 11 million.
Well, you know what? The word audit is an aggravation, because if you get involved in an audit and you took a step you shouldn't have, and they find out you shouldn't have, that audit might get a little onerous.
Yes.
It might take a long time, and it might cost a lot of money and a lot of aggravation. If your time is worth $100 an hour and all of a sudden you got to put 100 hours into defending your stupid decisions, I mean, add it up. Or on the other hand, you hire an attorney and or a CPA that you have to pay $200 or $300 an hour to defend your stupid decision because you didn't do it correctly. So the key thing that Vince is saying, hey, it's pretty easy to do it right.
It is. It's not that difficult to do those. Those are simple gift actions.
I mean, I get the same lecture from Vince every year.
That's right. I do. I tell Joe every time he puts that $100,000 donation, he's got to file a gift tax return.
You hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't remember the $100,000, but I like the number.
The other thing on that subject, Joe, charitable giving, you know, people should remember that if you're 70 and a half and you're required to make these minimum distributions, these required minimums, RMDs, you can use IRA money, money that's in these tax-deferred accounts.
You have to take it, but you can give it to a charity.
You can give it away to a charity,
no
and no tax. It's a beautiful thing, up to $100,000. It's a beautiful thing.
Now, if you got $1 million IRA, which people get up when they transfer it out of a pension fund, and the Internal Revenue says you're 70 and a half and you have to take out roughly 4%, which is be how much out of a million?
Well, 40,000.
40,000. I'm just looking at the math. And you don't want to pay tax on that 40,000. You give it to WCNO or to a church or whatever.
Exactly.
You now.
And you've satisfied your required minimum distribution and there's no tax.
And there's no tax. And the institution you're giving it to, as long as they're a charitable institution, they have no taxes.
And to belt and suspender that, you actually have your IRA custodian wire the money or send the money directly to the charity. This way you're protected, and there's proof that the money went where it was supposed to be.
It's people I very often, and we do this, I often say, hey, just don't take and put the money in your pocket.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Now, technically, there's rules that allow you to do that for a 60-day period
of
time.
You're talking about normal IRAs. When you're 70 and a half, they're going to stick you with that the tax when you take it out.
If you take it. So you got to be careful. So the key thing.
Can't roll it over.
No.
Just hey, all you have to do is a little bit of homework. Do it properly. We don't call it tax evasion. We call it tax avoidance.
Avoidance.
It's legal. Mm-hmm. You don't want to pay more than you have to. Now, if you want to pay more than you have to, hallelujah, we're happy for you. I have not met one person yet that wanted to do that.
Well, that's what I like to say to all those people who claim that they really don't need the refund and they want to help the government reduce the deficit. I tell them, well, just instead of taking the refund, tell the government to keep it.
Yeah, and they say?
Oh, they say, hey, out of your mind.
Exactly. What horse did you come riding in on, dummy?
Well, you're talking about normal rollovers. You can, you know, the people can take money out of an IRA thinking they're going to roll it over. I'm talking about less than 70 and a half. You can roll it over within 60 days, and there's no effect. But if you miss it by one day, you get taxed on the whole thing.
Do you know what he just said? You understand what he just said?
I'm pretty sure.
Let's say you have an IRA.
Say you got $100,000.
Say it's $100,000, and you're 59 and a half years old, so you're entitled to take it out without a 10% penalty.
Right.
So now you say, well, I'm not sure. I want to roll it over, but I'm not sure where I want to roll it over. So I'll take the money. So you get a check for $100,000. You put it in your drawer, and you say, I'm
going to... Or you put it in a bank.
Or you put it in your own bank.
You cash
deposit
it.
You cash it. And you say, well, I'm going to identify another IRA to put it in, but I got this. I got sidetracked. I got a wedding, and my kids are sick, whatever, and you forget about it. So all of a sudden, on day 61 or 62, you wake up and say, oh, my God. I didn't reinvest that money in another IRA.
Guess what?
So you got to pay tax.
You got to pay tax. 100%.
Now, what if it's a Roth that you've done that?
Well, Roths are a different story. Roths are tax-free if you hold them for the requirement time.
5 years, right?
Five years.
Yeah.
And then you could take it out.
Stay with the thought with a Roth. This is an educational time. A Roth means I put money into this account, and I've already paid tax on the money that goes into the account. And if you're over 50, you can put $6,500 a year.
Yes, if you're over 50, you can put $6,500, correct. Under 50, it's $5,500.
And then I put that money in, and I pay tax on it this year. 20 years later, that $6,500 is now worth $20,000.
Mm-hmm.
I can take the whole thing out, spend it, not a dime in tax.
That's correct.
So what I put in plus all the gain.
Right.
Again, the rule is 5 years. Now, is the rule 5 years from the last deposit?
You know, I don't know the answer to that one exactly, Joe. I know it's 5 years when you convert.
When you start it,
but I'm not sure if you've been making
how the increments. And I'm not either, because it's a question all of a sudden just jumped in my head, and I've not had anybody ask me that. But it's a question. I know it's a 5 year hold. Right. Now I would assume the infernal would probably say, you got to hold that portion at least 5 years, because the whole concept is to get people to save money for retirement. That's the object of all IRAs or any kind of pension plan. The government is trying to give you an incentive to save money for your retirement so that they don't have to support you when you go in that nursing home when you don't decide to die that's paying $6,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 a month and Medicaid has to pay. They don't want that. They want you to pay for it. So,
Well, sticking back to these required minimum distributions or the RMDs, I get questions quite often from people. Well, I'm required to take out $15,000, but do I have to take it all out of one account?
No.
The answer is no.
Of course not.
You can take a little here, a little, as long as overall, collectively, you've taken out the amount, the RMD, you're okay. Some people don't understand, and they get nervous about it.
Well, and I've got a very few clients that calculate their own. Most are accountants retired, and they may have multiple accounts, and they just tell me how much money. Because what happens is the people that are holding the IRAs, the custodian, they have to notify the government. They have to notify you all kinds of rules about making sure you take your RMD. That doesn't mean you have to take it, but they have to notify you of the rules.
Right.
So then you now can not follow the rules. You can do whatever you want. So like Vince said, you could have 10 different retirement accounts, and you have to take out $10,000 a year. If you took $1,000 out of each one, you would comply with the rule for taking your required minimum distribution.
And you got to be careful, Joe, that you take the amount that you are required to take. If you don't, there's a penalty on what you don't take out and that you should have taken out.
And it's
severe.
And it's a little tiny
thing, like 50% penalty.
It's the biggest one in the IRS code, is it not?
Yes, 50% penalty.
It's, you know, and old people, they really don't think about that. But why is such a big one? Anyway, let's take another call. Caller, it's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Well, good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a question in regards to IRAs.
Go right ahead.
And you're talking about if you're over 55, you can put up to $6,500 into the IRA?
That's over 50.
Over 50.
Okay. How many IRAs can you have?
You can have 10.
You can have as many as you desire, but it wouldn't be practical.
On the other hand, you can only put $5,500 a year total, or $6,500 a year if you're over 50 total into that. Now,
it's the same concept in reverse.
However, let's just go, you're self-employed. There are SEP IRAs, simple IRAs. There's different types of IRAs that allow you to put a much larger sum of money to this. But if you're a regular working person, what I'm trying to say is, I think when I look at how many IRAs are available for the average person, there's 3 or 4 or a half a dozen. And you can put up, like, what was it, the 401k self-directed?
There's employer-sponsored plans, Joe. There's plans for individuals. Like, you could do a regular IRA, which I call an ordinary IRA,
right,
whatever. that an individual can do if you're an employee or not. You can do that. Other plans are strictly employer plans. For example, 401k plans are employer plans. Or the simple plans, simple IRAs, are employer plans.
Now, when it says employer, let's say you're self-employed. And you can set up an IRA instead of $6,500 or $5,500. You might be able to put as much as $15,000.
That's correct. If it's a simple IRA, let's say you're a partner in a partnership.
Yeah.
As long as you have enough earnings from that partnership, and it's an LLC, for example, because you have to pay. The IRS wants you to pay Social Security taxes on all this money. But if you're self-employed and you have self-employed earnings, you could put up to $15,000 if you're a partner in a partnership, for example.
So what you have to do is, this is not an easy answer, because you meet with somebody like Vince and say, hey, here is my working situation. Here's my employer situation. What can I do to pay as little tax as humanly possible and put this money aside into a retirement account? Are you with me there?
Sure.
So it's not a simple answer. If you're a working person working for a company that's not contributing to a 401k, under 50 is $5,500 a year. Over 50 is $6,500.
And Joe, you could also, and caller, you could do a spousal IRA as well. You know, if your spouse doesn't work and she's not, or she does work and she's not eligible for a plan, or he's not eligible for a plan at work, you could put money away for that spouse as well. So you could put $5,500 or $6,500, depending on age, for you and your spouse.
So it's again, it's not as simple as it sounds on the surface. It really depends.
And there's complex rules on these IRAs and
Take a person, let's say a realtor, and their the market's hot and they're making $200,000 a year. Well, they might be able to put more than $30,000 a year aside, depending on how they structure it.
If you're structured, let's say they're a Schedule C, for example, you could set up a SEP IRA and you could put up to 20% of your profits away.
See, I mean, there's many rules.
Up to maximum of 50, I believe it's 57,000 in 18.
It's a pretty good
chunk of numbers.
But what you have to do these are not easy answers. You have to sit with somebody that knows what they're talking about, somebody like a CPA, and say, hey, here is my situation, and I'm having this big year, and I don't want to pay it all to the government. What do I do?
Right.
And you don't have to do it every year, every month, or whatever, but let's say you make $500,000 one year, and the next year you make $23. Well, the $500,000 a year, you put as much aside as possible. You know, you don't have to do it every year.
Yes. Yeah, and if you're, as I said, if you have a client who's an S corporation, for example, it's only two employees, him and his wife.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, in that case, he was eligible for what they call a solo 401k.
You can do everything in the world based on it. But one of the problems is, if you have a company and you've got 10 employees, you set up a retirement plan, you've got to be equal for everybody. You can't discriminate. Except
there are exceptions.
There are some exceptions.
But one of them is a defined benefit plan.
You've got to be careful again.
Yes.
All these things have to be done properly up front, because the Internal Revenue doesn't really like it when you don't pay them.
But it's perfectly legal, but there are downsides to all of it, because you still have to include all your employees.
That's my point.
And so, but it allows the top-heavy people to put a heck of a lot more in than you could.
Defined benefit. You take certain companies, they hire people, and they say, okay, fine, we're going to pay you $1 million a year in salary, but we're going to show you a $2 million savings account for retirement that is tax-deferred. Well, they say, hallelujah, I get to live really, really, really well now, but when I get officially old and fired, I still got a bunch of change to live on.
When you get old and fired?
Well, I assume they fire you when you get old.
Well, some people do retire, Joe.
Without being fired.
Being fired.
Well, you know, hey, you ask the wives when the guy comes home and watches the tube all the time.
And there are special rules talking about rolling over.
Yeah.
There are special rules for people who leave companies, say, after 20 years, Joe, and say they bought into a company drip plan, what they call dividend reinvestment, or they have a stock plan where they could buy into the company
stock. Right.
There are special rules that allow you to roll those over into brokerage accounts and save a lot of money on taxes doing it. You pay some tax up front, but the majority of the gain gets deferred to the future.
The key thing is this. There's so many different things, and it's not that easy. When you're a regular working guy working for a company and they don't have a retirement plan, we got the $6,500, $5,500 rule. But when you're self-employed or you have a small business, now you've got multiple options and you just have to learn them. so that you can make the right decision to save as much as possible and not donate it to the government when you're making good years.
Absolutely.
Uh-huh. Makes sense.
But you should meet with a professional caller.
Yeah,
meet with your CPA or a financial advisor and work on a plan for yourself.
Hey, I'm a financial advisor, and let me tell you right now, if somebody came to me and says, Joe, I'm making $500,000 a year and I'm self-employed, how do I set this thing up properly? I go to three different people. One is Vince, the CPA. Then I go back to my company and let their tax advisors get involved. I want to make sure you are structured properly so that you don't run into a problem ever.
Makes sense.
All right, my man, we beat that one to death, didn't we?
That was great.
I hope it helped you a bit or anybody else that might be listening, because this is not a subject that comes up every day.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much, and bless you all.
Same to you. 1-888-221-8990.
You know, we've been talking a lot about mandatory distributions, and Vince, I have a question for you. Let's say somebody withdraws their mandatory distribution and they give it to a charitable organization, but they say to the charitable organization, I want you to buy long-term municipal bonds, and during the rest of my life, I want you to send me the income from those bonds.
Is
there taxes there?
Well, no. Well, yes and no. You'd have to set up a charitable trust to do this, and I know what you're talking about. Yes, you can, and you can get a tax deduction for it. But what happens is you wind up present valuing the value of the income you're going to be getting out of that, so it reduces the amount of your current tax deduction as a charitable deduction because it present values all your anticipated earnings.
Now, if he did a tax-free municipal for the charitable,
well, if it's tax-free, well, then there would be.
But it makes no sense because a charity doesn't have any tax anyway, right?
Exactly. So why would you do that?
Why would you do that?
But the point is, yes, you can get a current deduction and get income from it, and then upon your death, the money goes to the charity completely.
In fact, the word that we used to use, and I'm sure they still do, is charitable remainder trust.
That's exactly what it is, Joe.
Charitable
it's
remainder trust.
It's called a charitable remainder trust.
Yeah.
Still is.
And you know, think about this, that a person that's substantial, and they want a decent income, and they want to help the charity now, these charitable remainder trusts can work magnificently for both parties.
Yes. And it gives you a chance to earn some money in your retirement years. And then you're assured that the charity will get the money when you die.
Right. Yep. 1-888-221-8990. Well, that was a good question.
That was an excellent question. Thank you, Alan.
Not one we get every day. Not only from Alan, but from our caller there.
Oh, yeah. He had
to
a
know
great
about
question,
the IRAs. Too. You know, Alan, I'm impressed you didn't fall asleep today.
And another question that comes up. Another question comes up.
You're not teaching any swimming lessons these days, are you?
No. not yeshiva? No?
Well, that's an inside joke, folks. We had more fun with that. I wish we'd have recorded that one and saved it forever for posterity. We may have, but
yes,
I don't know where it is.
It might be on the archives back in June. Check the June archives.
On demand.
He taught swimming.
He taught swimming. Yeah, but it was a breaststroke. That was the important thing. And that was after shul, right?
Joe, seriously, let's get back to the stock market a minute. The bottom line of what we were talking about earlier is when you see these big short-term declines, don't panic out of it, right?
The average person does panic, but if they're not paying attention, they're smarter. I hate to tell you, but in the long run, if you have time, and especially if you're in your 30s, 40s, 50s, even your 60s, I tell you, this panicking, we're in America, folks. America is the land of milk and honey. This is America. Regardless of politics, regardless who's running our country, this is the place. And America has survived. Our Constitution is written in such a way to protect people and all of us. I mean, we are the luckiest people alive. Let me take another caller quickly. Caller's Joe Martek. You're on the radio.
Good afternoon, sir. My name's Randy. I wanted to ask you, I appreciate you fellas doing all this on the radio. It's very informative. I've got a question I wanted to refer to on my 401k. I was thinking of doing retirement. I'm 62. I'm wanting to retire. Medical issues. I want to pull out the 401k to pay the house off, so I don't have that to go into retirement. But when I do, it pretty much break me, you know, as far as liquid, you know.
Also, you're going to pay tax on all that money.
Yeah, and I wanted to wait till I was going to go part-time after the first year, because I can't keep going full-time. And I was thinking maybe it would be an advantage to wait till after the first year when the income gets lower. The peace of mind just paying the house off outweighs the little bit on
the tax consequence, right?
Well, caller, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you wouldn't want to trigger that income into this year, particularly if you've been working full time, and next year would be a little less income. So you clearly want to be pushing that off until next year. I don't know whether redeeming your IRAs. I know what you're saying about peace of mind, but you must be a little concerned about liquidity as well.
Another concern is, I very often had people, I say, hey, listen, take some in December, some in January. So you move it over two tax years. Your most important thing is, before you make this decision, is talk to your tax advisor and say, hey, walk me through this and make sure I'm doing the right thing so we lose as little as humanly possible.
That's also a possibility. But I'm questioning, Joe, you're right about that. Questioning whether he should be taking all of it, well, no matter which year he takes it, whether he should be he should be basically drawing out all his liquid funds to pay his mortgage off. I'm not so sure.
If you don't have liquid funds, see, problem with taking it, you pay the tax. Now, I understand the stomach, you want to have the house paid for, but is it worth paying 20% or 15 or 30% in tax? And it really depends on your tax structure. So here again, the key thing is this: before you make the decision, you talk to your tax advisor and say, hey, here's what I want to do. Walk me through it. Make sure I do it the right way.
Right, because it'd be earned income against added to this year.
It's not earned income.
It's ordinary income. But
you don't pay Social Security and Medicare on it, but you do have to pay income tax.
Oh,
it's subject to tax.
It's subject to tax, yes, income tax.
Not Social Security and Medicare,
but it would be income tax.
Right, and so you can't get Medicare until I'm 65, and I'm 63 in May. Thinking of maybe work till May, if I can do it.
You may want to hold that decision till you get to be 65, and perhaps
now,
even 66.
We also ran out of time. We're officially going to be off the air right now. So you left your name and number. We'll try to get back to you tomorrow and see if we can counsel you. But thank you so much for the call, and until next week. Adios.
Yep, God bless you all.
Yep. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Never been a sinner, I never sin. I got a friend in Jesus. So you know that when I die, He's gonna set me up with the Spirit in the sky. Oh, set me up.
You've been listening to the Team Martech program. The Team Martech program is a paid program. The content was provided by HF Martech. WCNO, its staff, management, and ownership were not responsible for its content. Investment involves risk. Prior to making any investment, an investor should meet suitability requirements. Past results are not necessarily indicative of future performance. Neither the opinions expressed nor the information provided constitutes a recommendation to purchase or provide investment advice. The material presented is not a substitute for obtaining professional advice from a qualified person or firm. Securities offered through Centaurus Financial, member FINRA and SIPC, and Michael Paulus with East Coast Mortgage Lenders, NMLS number 353429. Tune in next Wednesday at 4 p.m. for the Team Martech program here on WCNO 89.9 FM. For more information, Team Martech is available at 772-678-7725.
I've been tested, My faith has been tried. Satan has attempted to destroy my life. He's robbed, abused, accused, and stole. He's done everything he could do to conquer my soul. But I still have joy.